Okay, I think I've got everybody here now. And do I got Rick and Mike here?
Yes, Mike's here.
Okay, and Rick?
Good evening. How are you?
Fine. Okay, let me go ahead and introduce my guests here. Sometimes it takes a minute or two to try to see if everything coordinates right, and luckily we have backup. So I've got Rick and Mike, who are both working on the Arizona border, and I thought that it would be good to talk to somebody who's been working this area and inform the public as to, you know, what is going on down there in a more, not just depending upon the media to give us the information, but to provide people that can give us some more firsthand information. And I'm going to let Mike, you start out and introduce yourself as much as you want, because there's reasons why we're not giving last names here. And I will let them go ahead and start. So, Mike?
Okay, good evening. My name's Mike. I live in the desert southwest. And just a heads up, If anybody's out there and recognizes my name and they happen to be a chat room, please refrain from including certain names. For the lack of a better term, this is not a game, but the game that we're in is a very deadly game. And, you know, when you start interfering with a $5 billion a year drug industry, it'll squish you like a bug. So I live out in the desert southwest, and I experience these issues all the time that we're going to discuss here, and we're going to have a wide range of information to help bring the listeners up to date. And what we're asking is that, you know, you may have, you know, a lot of information that you've collected from the news media, but oftentimes it's, you know, second or third hand information, and it's not always 100% correct. So we're just asking that you give us a listen, and we'll tell you directly from where we see on the ground. Rick?
Good evening, everyone. Like Mike was saying, we really have a lot of rules that we have to play by, and one of them is what we call OPSEC, Operation Security. So there will be a lot of gray areas that we won't speak of as far as where we operate in specific and areas that we live in. I do live in Phoenix. I've been doing this for about close to 2 years now, and I know it's not a lot of time, but in that 2 years we're able to take about close to $4.5 million off the street. So we are getting the job done, plus not just that, but also including how many lives we've saved out there. You know, the desert is a very unforgiving place, let's put it that way. If you're not prepared to be out there, you can definitely not come back home. Mike, you want to go ahead and start us off?
Okay, very good. I just kind of want to maybe just run down some of the topics that we're going to discuss, and then we'll flesh each one of these subjects out. There's been some information. Melody had asked some things about gang activity, gang tattoos, gang graffiti, things like that. So we're going to touch on that. We're going to touch on our group. It's Sonoran Desert Patrol. You can visit the website, SonoranDesertPatrol.com. Sonoran is spelled S-O-N-O-R-A-N. We might make reference to some previous interviews. We're going to discuss a little bit about the terrain, step into insurgency, a pretty good amount there. Some of the problems that we've occurred or witnessed out here, discussion about equipment, the treatment of the people that we encounter out here as to, you know, the rescue attempts. We're going to talk about search and rescue, the humanitarian aspect of it, maybe a little bit about firearms, and maybe a couple of other things. So that's kind of like an overview. Just as an idea, just in the Phoenix area alone, through confidential sources that we have, it's confirmed that they estimate that there's at least 30,000 combatants, gang members, just in the Phoenix area alone. And I'm sure that no matter where you live in the United States, that you can drive to your certain areas of town where you know and you can see all the gang graffiti spray painted on the wall. And what we're going to try to show is that it may originate down here or through certain corridors, but what we're doing does affect you whether you live in Denver or, you know, pick a spot in between, or east and west, north and south. So that's kind of what's going on. I know Rick's a little bit more up to speed in some of this gang activity, gang signs, gang graffiti, tattoos and things. So for right now, I'll turn that over to you, Rick.
Thank you.
And, but before you guys get too far into this, I also want, you know, people to be aware of what seems to be, I mean, there's more than just gang things that are going on. I mean, there seems to be more that's coming across the border that we need to be aware of, and it's coming here, and it isn't just gangs, right?
Yeah, that you would be speaking about what we call OTMs, other than Mexicans, anybody from another country. We have not encountered any OTMs. We have ran into other groups and read other reports of other groups in other states who have, from Chinese to Afghanistan, Syrian, Pakistani. There seems to be kind of a trend of to be a lot of Middle Eastern, but then you're also getting a lot of people from Peru, Brazil, you know, all South and Central America. So it's just not Mexicans. It's like with one of the gangs, they're called the MS-13, which is the Mara Salvatruce. They're actually from El Salvador, Ecuador, and those regions. But it actually started in Ecuador.
L.A.
Well, it started in L.A., but then when it got really big, it was in Ecuador. That's when the problem really started. It was really small, minute in Los Angeles. You were only looking at maybe just a few hundred of them. But once they started to send them back to their original homeland, that's when they really started to do the recruiting. I was reading a report yesterday. The two states that are really getting hit by these guys the hardest is Virginia and Washington, D.C. Go figure that one. Washington, D.C. and Virginia were having more gang violence with the Mara Salvatruce than any other states, including Los Angeles. From machete attacks to gang shootings to robberies to child prostitution, and this is all documented where I was reading this last night. So, I mean, it's showing that it's not just in the southern border states that the violence is spilling over, the cartels are here. It's showing that these guys are moving like cancer does. You know, cancer doesn't like to stay in one spot. It likes to move around the body and eat anything and everything it can. Well, this is what's happening with the United States. These guys are moving all the way up to, you know, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Florida, all the way up to Washington and Seattle, Washington State, Iowa, just really places that you would never think that these guys are moving to. They're moving because this is a big industry. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. You know, it's the one thing that I can say, and I've said it before, this is the one business that you really don't need any advertisement with, and you'll still make billions of dollars. You know, it's the word of mouth. The other things are, is the other threats that we have besides the gangs and the cartels down there is the crooked law enforcement that are working for the cartels. The RIP crews, we just had an incident last week in Eloy where a RIP crew opened fire on a truck full of UDAs, undocumented aliens, killed two of them, and the other 19 or 18 of them scattered in the desert. They thought it was a dope load coming up, and they were going to rob and, you know, shoot and kill whoever they had to steal their drugs. These haven't been confirmed if they're actual local gang members or who they are. So far, every RIP crew that's been busted so far has not had any ties to any major organization or crime organization. They've just been pretty much lone wolves who've been doing this. But when we're out there, this is the problem that we're encountering. We're getting surrounded from all directions out there, from the north, south, east, and west.
Now, do you guys have any contact with any of the gentlemen working the northern border? Are there people doing that?
Yes, there actually are groups out there working the northern borders. They're actually fighting the Chinese triads, and they're also intercepting a lot of drugs from the Russians too. The Russians like to do a lot of human smuggling, from what I've been hearing reports for the northern border. And the Chinese triads are the ones who are moving their China white heroin into the country. And a lot of the sex slave is coming out of the north too.
Okay, so what are we're dealing with? Some immigrants coming across, and some of those immigrants possibly are being mules and other are being caught up into this trade. And some of them, you know, I'm willingly, some of them unwillingly, I would imagine. So, but what is that percentage that you think that's really taking place with what you guys are concerned about?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's because the media doesn't really want to talk about it, so they leave it real gray. They don't say if the... You know, if somebody, a mule, was coming over with drugs on him, if he was forced into doing it or if he did it on his own, some reports will say that. I would say a good 60-40%, you know, 60 of them are doing it pretty much on their own. The other 40%, you know, they're getting coerced into doing it by either holding their family at ransom. You know, I just read an article about a 15-year-old kid who is getting charged for 9 counts of murder because he flipped a van. He was a driver of a van, and he told authorities, you know, they will kill my family if I didn't drive, and they kept asking who they was, and he never answered. So it's one of those, you know, are they using it as a scapegoat, or, you know, because there's been reports of kids who were notorious for cutting people's heads off in Mexico. They busted a guy last year. I think he was like 14 years old, cutting people's heads off in Mexico, and he lived in L.A. So it's one of those, you know, you really don't know what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, it could be one of those, yeah, the devil made me do it, or yeah, you know, they had a gun to my mom's head, but he really doesn't, you know. We don't know.
Now, there's one
we
of
don't
the...
know.
One of the things that we had we did on a prior program, not on KHIN, but I do another radio program on Saturday mornings, and as we had discussed somewhat, that, you know, the training that some of these members were getting, some of it started out here or via trainers that came from our midst, is that right?
Okay, or? Yes, you are correct. The Los Zetas were actually trained in American bases. That's the Mexican military special forces is basically who these guys were. They got hired by the Gulf Cartel. It started off with two of them, and then two branched out and told everybody else, this is how much money you can make. By 2010, they had over 3,000 of them. Now that there's been a war going on from 2010 until today with the Los Zetas, the numbers are kind of dwindling, but not that much. They're starting to recruit, and we have reports now, and it's all over the media, how the MS-13 has now joined forces with the Los Zetas. Me and Mike were actually talking about that today. And that's a scary, scary thing, because you have one of the most notorious violent street gangs who just joined forces with one of the most violent cartel families in Mexico, which now in return, the Los Zetas will start training the MS-13, which these guys are combat ready. You know, they are not your just run-of-the-mill lettuce pickers. These guys are combat ready. They are their special forces who were trained by our military. And not just our military, also the Israeli military.
Okay, so when you had prior like things that went a lot happened in the Central America and other countries. Did their insurgencies and uprisings kind of take the same pattern as what ours is, or do you see differences or similarities there?
Yeah, absolutely. They're still just as vicious, if not more vicious, down in their own territory. Because at that point in time, you know, the police, when they start hunting their own police departments and killing them, you know, and no one's going to come after them and do anything, the military, you know, there's something wrong with the military. I don't want to speculate or start throwing out conspiracies, but in my opinion, I do believe that the military has a big play in the cartels. We can get into that a little later. But as far as their violence down in, you know, in Honduras and Ecuador and San Salvador and those areas where these guys are coming from, yeah, they stepped up the violence big time. That's where they were actually a beta testing ground to see what they could get away with. The violence really started to spark after we started shipping a lot of these guys home.
Okay, now, and bringing in, I mean, there were some incidents recently that had to do with some of our higher-ups, you know, helping supply some guns. Is that right?
That is correct. That is called the Operation Fast and the Furious. The ATF, Eric Holder, and quite a few other top dogs helped arm the cartels. But the sad thing is it didn't start like last year. It's actually been going on since the Bush administration. They actually found some proof that had been going on before Obama. So that tells you how long that's been, and they just busted it last year. So they're guessing that they gave the cartels about 1 million guns, maybe a little less. I'm going to tell you probably about 5 million guns and more ammunition than I can shake, than I can even imagine. And not only that, but these guys are also, they have RPGs, which is a rocket-propelled grenade launchers. They have your military M203 grenade launcher, which is under their M16s or M4s. They carry C4. These guys have high sophisticated radios. They have tactical gear. You know, you can go online and actually see a lot of the busts that they have and their weapons and their equipment strewed out, and they've got more stuff than a dang platoon does. You know, it's insane. But the thing is it's these guys' weapons that they're coming across from aren't weapons that came from the United States. These guys are getting military-grade weapons and police force weapons. You can't go to a gun show or a gun store and buy a full automatic AK-47 or a full automatic M4 without proper paperwork, and you have to wait 6 to 9 months on top of that. So you just can't go purchase one of those. You can't go purchase at a gun show, you know, RPGs. That's, you know, people don't understand that, you know. And so this Fast and the Furious was actually an attack on our Second Amendment, because their theory was if we can get enough people killed by these weapons, we can turn around and say if Arizona didn't have these weapons or New Mexico or Texas or California, then none of this would happen. So we have to get rid of these guns. Well, it backfired on them. The agents who were actually watching these guns go across the border were screaming, can we please stop these guys before they go across? And they said, negative, let them go. And they've been doing it for years. You know, it wasn't like a 6 month to a year project. This has been going on for quite some time.
Well, do you ever wonder if maybe they were being misled by, you know, their higher ups in the reasoning behind it? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, these guys, they didn't go. This is what I'm trying to explain is these guns that the ATF shipped out are not guns from your local gun store and your local gun shows. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
This means that they're military and law enforcement weapons. These guys have gear that you can't buy anywhere else. Unless you know somebody in the black market, but good luck with that, especially in Arizona. You know, everybody, it's so tight out here, unless a gun store gets hit. But these weapons are not gun stores. You know, I would say maybe 10,000 of them got bought at a gun store or a gun show just to prove a point, but that's about it. Because we're not getting any of these guns that are coming back. They're semi-auto. You know, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, in those firearms that were purchased in Arizona, that the licensed FFL holders, they had gone to the ATF and says, well, we don't think we should sell this to this guy because he's a known gang member and we're pretty sure that he's going to be shipping them south of the border, and the ATF told them to go ahead and do it because they were going to track them. So in addition to the military-grade firearms and RPGs and hand grenades and C4, there were firearms that were purchased through FFL holders, but that's just a small fraction of the bigger picture.
I would guess, in my opinion, like less than 10,000 of them. You know, because they were sending their wives and their daughters in there who are of age but didn't barely spoke any English with $10,000 worth of cash in their hand and saying, can I buy, can I get 5 AK-47s and 5 M4s with 10,000 rounds? And they're like, are you kidding me? And then that's when they would, you know, the FFL holders would call the ATF and be like, I've got a lady in here with $10,000 cash. She wants 10 guns and 10,000 rounds of ammo. And they're like, sell it to her. And they're just like, are you serious? There's been many reports from gun owners out here, and there was one shop out here who actually was crooked. They did shut him down. He was up north in Cave Creek. That's the only gun store that went down with this whole Fast and the Furious. Everybody else was legit. And it sickens me because now they just armed these guys like nobody's business. You know, and when people who don't really realize what's going on and they see us with these long arms and our sidearms and body armor and camouflage, and they're like, well, you know, why are you going out looking like that? And it's like, well, you can blame Mr. Eric Holder for that one. He kind of armed these guys, so now we have to do whatever we can to avoid being shot. Or if we do, protecting ourselves so we don't die. You know, there's no more out of hey, let's go ahead and go out there and pack a pistol and a flashlight and a backpack and go, you know, rescue some UDAs and maybe stop some drug mules. You know, these guys are going to open fire on you now. Look at Brian A. Terry, for example. You know, he had a beanbag, and he was told to use a beanbag gun instead of his M4, and this guy used an AK-47. You know, so they don't play by the rules. There are no rules for these guys out there whatsoever. And there's a lot of rules for us and the law enforcement that are out there.
So what do the Mexican authorities think about all of this? Are they...
I'm sorry, I don't want
to. I know.
I try not. I'm trying. That's probably the funniest thing I've heard all day. They don't care. They know what's going on. I'm not going to lie to you. Mike told me to be honest. They don't care. They're getting paid. The ones who actually do care are all dead, or they've retired and split and got their families and ran away. But anybody who stuck around, they're corrupt. You know, it's got so bad over there, Melody, that the Mexican government their military is being caught with vehicles with humans and narcotics coming across the border, dropping them off.
So in other words, they've pretty much just kind of had to join in whether they wanted to or not.
Oh, no, they wanted to join in. There's a lot of money in this.
Okay, right.
Yeah, this isn't the Mexican military. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could actually go ahead and wipe all these guys out. You know, if you have a military who can't handle their own business inside of their own country, what does that tell you? You know, you're weak somewhere, big time, or you're corrupt. And, you know, if the Mexican military really wanted to, they can just go ahead and shut business down with these guys all day long, but they don't. They help them. Uh-huh. there's a lot of money involved in this.
I know this may sound naive too, again, but do you feel like maybe, you know, with all this going on and this kind of profitable business that's going back and forth over the border, do you think possibly that those people are being set up to, when you hear the incidents of our side purchasing the amount of ammunition that has recently been announced, that does it make you kind of feel like that, you know, I mean, since the powers that be profit from these wars no matter what, what do you have anything to say about that, or am I?
Do we feel betrayed?
Do what?
Do we feel betrayed? Yeah, we feel that our own government has failed us something fierce, and not only failed us, but set us up to fail. Something's going on.
Right.
You know, it's not hard to connect the dots. It really isn't, especially when you're starting to get Afghanistan heroin coming through the country, coming south.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's when you started to say, hey, the CIA is playing buddy-buddy now with the cartels and the Taliban.
Yeah, that the U.S. military has guarded the poppy fields in Afghanistan and guarding the warehouse where it's being stored.
Yeah, then where's it going from there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are you doing with all that poppy? What are you doing with all that heroin? Where the hell is it going? Oh, hey, well, let me guess, it's going all over the world, especially into the United States. You know, we can get into it's crazy how, like I said, you connect the dots. If you get a country to where they're doped up, then you can take over that country overnight. And I do believe that's what I feel that my government is trying to do, our government is trying to do to us, is to dumb down the public so much while everybody's getting loaded, they can turn around and take away our rights. Oh, wait, they're doing it right now. I'm sorry. You know, it's like the national, you know, we can go on for hours. I want to kind of stick on topic, though, but go ahead, Mike.
Okay, well, you know, we're talking about Afghanistan and the opium and everything. It's been a long time, 10 years now. Maybe people had slipped from their memory. But before the invasion of Afghanistan, when the Taliban had taken over, I vividly recall images of the Taliban going out here in the poppy fields and driving tractors through them. And purposely destroying it, or taking just a stick and whacking the poppy buds and breaking them, because that they felt that the drugs were a scourge on, you know, the society and on man, you know, the whole structure of the family and everything. So, but now I guess once again back to the people that are dumbed down and doped up. That for some reason it's acceptable when Geraldo Rivera interviews some guy from the Marine Corps and talks about guarding this stuff, that they come around and say, well, it's because the Taliban would make money off of these drugs, and so then therefore we have to guard these poppy fields to keep the Taliban from coming in and getting it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's certainly not what you were saying 10 years ago.
Not only that, where's it going? You know, where's all that dope going? You know what I'm saying?
Your children's arms.
That's correct. I mean, it's look at Russia. Russia, good example. Putin is so pissed off right now, it's not even funny, about the heroin trade in Afghanistan. He's very upset about what's going on because it's flooding into his country, and he wants to put a stop to it, something fierce. If our country was so gung-ho about that, wouldn't we be doing the same thing about the drug cartels? Wouldn't we have as many troops, vehicles, and anything you could, and maybe making some type of a treaty with Mexico and sending in our special forces and taking care of business? You know, we've done it thousands of times in many countries for many, many decades. They won't touch these guys with a 10-foot pole. You know, and it raises a lot of questions and a lot of eyebrows of, like, why is the government not touching this, and it's in its own backyard, but yet it'll go to a foreign country and send troops like Africa, you know, into their diamond fields, but they won't send troops down to our borders? That doesn't make any sense to me. You know,
apparently there's a whole lot of things that aren't making sense. And
well,
people...
it does, but it's one of those things of like, I don't know what kind of show you have, Melanie, and I don't really want to sound like an Alex Jones, but you know, I have one word. It's new, or three of them. I'm sorry, New World Order. That's it, plain and simple. If you know, do your homework on it. If you don't know what it is out there for the listeners, it's posted everywhere. And you're seeing them, it's happening in our own backyard, in our time as we speak.
Well, you know, one of the things that you see, I mean, because there is so much money being made by anybody that gets involved in this process, no matter what level, strata of society that they're at. And this isn't, you know, this goes from, you know, human trafficking to you name it. Whatever it looks like, you know, money can be made, it seems to make it okay. And, you know, when I go to, it's gotten to the point that money is the only thing that seems to be able to justify a lot of these actions. And when are we going to stop letting that be the justification? You see that in every aspect of our lives, even though, we can make some money on it. You know, we want to vote this in. We want to do this because
yep.
money can be made at it. We got to start analyzing and asking questions. Is that what we really want? If, as long as money can be made, we need to track down and follow this process through, because when we start looking at when money's being thrown at us, who and where is it coming from? Because the guys at the top may be the ones that you're talking about right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's no... Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, when, you know, this kind of goes down to the root, back to Fast and Furious and everything, so they can fuel both sides and then stand back and let each side annihilate each other, and then that fits right into their plans. Or your children get caught with a small baggie of heroin, and then they get to go to prison, and then that fuels the legal system and the private prisons and the judges and everything else like that. And then once they've been convicted of that, then they have a felony, and then they can't vote, and they can't own a firearm. So there's... You know, the more you look into this, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger all the time.
Yeah, and for those of us that were being accused of being conspiracy theorists from the beginning, we were just looking at the facts, and to be thrown in there, and there is a conspiracy, and it's far and wide and deep.
Oh, yes, I agree with you, absolutely. Absolutely, and it stems from our southern borders all the way up to Washington, D.C.,
and through internationally. I mean
yes,
these people on an international basis are having to deal with this as well. And if we don't start waking up and realizing that you know, we're being set up. And, I mean, who's going to stand to gain if we start having to deal with this issue on a more than talk basis, or more than, you know, it's obviously when you start seeing so many the law enforcement and whatever and now look like they came off a military base, you know.
Oh yeah. Well, they're passing all these laws too, so you can't go and protest. And I mean, I was watching videos on YouTube of people who were, all they were was repeating the Constitution and immediately getting hogtied. I was like, you're kidding me. And these ladies were like in their 60s. And a gentleman, too. They were just reading the Constitution, and they got arrested. You know, so it's like, wow, okay. You know, and it's like, well, what do we do about it? Well, I know what I can do about it. I can suit up. I grab my group, and we can go out there and stop these narcos from making their money.
Well, now is it pretty dangerous, then, to be not traveling in your area and or across into Mexico? All right, I'm hearing that there's travel restrictions or warnings particularly in Mexico.
Yeah, there's a lot of travel warnings right now. As a matter of fact, there's a shuttle bus that refuses to go to Rocky Point after it got robbed at gunpoint by a lone gunman. And this was what, remember, Mike, I was telling you about this a couple months ago, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Rocky Point is one of the biggest spots. I know the Sinaloa cartel is running that. And it, and people are, you know, it's kind of funny to hear the naive people being like, well, they're not running around shooting each other. And it's like, no, they'll just see you with money in your pocket and they'll snatch you up and hold you for ransom. You know, that's the point. These guys don't want to make a big scene in here in the States. They want to lay low, as low-key as possible. That's why a lot of times, you know, when we encounter these guys, and if they do have arms, some of them won't shoot. Some of them will shoot. Some of them are just like, screw it, I'm going to go back home in like a year or so. So, or I've been instructed from my jefe, if I don't shoot you and he finds out, then he'll cut my head off. You know, each cartel is a little different. I've read reports of how the Sinaloa cartel has instructed all of their troops to don't go out without a fight, period. Or if you don't, you die. You know, and so that just steps up the red light for us to really start being aware of our situation in and off the, you know, in our area of operations. We have to, 24/7, you have to grow eyes on you from the back of your head to the side of your head to forward. You have to be aware of your surroundings at all times doing this because they can get your license plate number. They can get your, you know, these guys are not stupid. These guys are very smart. And they have a lot of people in a lot of places, you know, from range from the DMV to the, you know, military to law enforcement, you know, everywhere they need to get their intel, they can get it, you know. So it is a dangerous, it is dangerous for us. That's why whenever we take pictures, we wear a mask. You know, you can't see our face. You'll never see our face. We won't go on the news and, you know, like some of these guys who will go and do these videos and, you know, put themselves on in the media. I won't do that because I have a family. You know, Mike has his family and the rest of our guys have families. We don't want to do that. We're not all gung-ho, G.I. Joe. You know, we're not bulletproof. That's for sure. Yeah. You know, and these guys are not afraid to come and take out a threat, if, and that's what we are.
So, and do the gentlemen on the people that are posted on the northern border, they're going under the same kind of threats and same type of movement of gangs, be it even though they may be a different nationality or whatever. Did I make that clear?
No, can you clear that up for me?
Okay, in other words, I guess, are the people on the northern border, are they dealing with a lot of the same issues that you guys are down there?
No. These guys ain't nowhere near as violent or crazy as what we're dealing with down here. They're just, the northern border, from what I hear, is pretty quiet, but they are moving a lot of stuff, but they're not putting up any kind of a fight. You're not hearing any kind of gunfire up there. Or any cases of these guys coming up with guns. They're just getting loads of heroin from what I've been gathering. And humans, they do a lot of human smuggling too.
Okay, and when you're talking about human smuggling, that could be insurgents as well as people that
correct.
Have, you know, means to want to be immigrants or illegals for work. So
right. Well, if there's a line of 60 of them, you know, you don't know who's from Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iran. You know, it's really hard to tell because they've been trained to it's Hamas and Hezbollah. Hezbollah has been training down south, and they've taught these guys to act like Hispanics, learn their culture, you know, just like any other insurgent would that they're trying to get into a country.
Uh-huh.
So that way, if they do get nailed at the border or 80 miles past the border, they can fit in, and you would never know unless you started speaking Arabic. Then you'll usually, from what I hear, heads start to turn when they do that. Again, I can't confirm that because we haven't ran into that problem yet.
So what do you think? What would you think is up then? Do you think that the same thing is coming down the road for us that has happened to some of these Central Americans countries and other countries around the world that have had this type of operation going on?
Oh yeah, it's already happening right now in our country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it is going to happen; it is happening.
Right.
There's reports of Hezbollah and Hamas training camps in Tucson, Texas, Virginia. I mean, all over the place. That our government knows that they're doing this.
Why would they allow that? That's what's.
I would love to answer that question, but I don't know how.
Not sure.
I mean, I.
Kind of,
go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, kind of this, you know, and it's not just necessarily people. If we're talking about the bigger picture of insurgency, that the bigger picture, it's not necessarily, and I warn everybody against this, that when they hear insurgency, because their head's been filled with a bunch of twaddle from the news media, that they think that some dude with a turban and he's throwing a bomb over in pick a country. And that's really certainly not true. And I'll give you an example here, and then maybe we can kind of branch out in the art of insurgency itself. Here in Arizona, we've got some of the people that live in the Phoenix area. I'm sure everybody's heard of about Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and then we have the county attorney, Andrew Thomas, and one of our senators, Russell Pierce. So, and I'll explain this part about the different parts of insurgency in a minute, but just to say that one part of it is political subversion. So you have some people, Mary Rose Wilcox, that is on the Phoenix City Council, or maybe she's on the Maricopa County Council or something like that. And then you have another activist, Randy Paraz, and they've got a recall election going against Russell Pierce because he was one of the driving forces against that Arizona 1070, that bill about employing illegal aliens. Then we had Andrew Thomas, that was the county attorney for Maricopa County, and he worked hand in hand with Sheriff Joe. You know, Sheriff Joe would have his, you know, crackdown enforcement, some people call them raids, on a lot of these employers that were, you know, employing illegal aliens, and then he turned the evidence over to Andrew Thomas that would prosecute these people. And Andrew Thomas got voted out of office, I don't know, a year or so ago, and there's been a whole great big legal battle because he was going after corruption in government, and one of the people that he was going after was Mary Rose Wilcox and some other people, and I think it was a county manager, Don Stapley, and then when he started stepping on some toes of some Superior Court judges, because they had a great big building, a new Superior Court high-rise building down in Phoenix, that they were, there seemed to be some underhanded deals about that. So anyway, the round and about story is then they've brought charges against Andrew Thomas, and just here within the last week he's been disbarred. And then this Mary Rose Wilcox comes out and makes this press statement that now that they've gotten rid of Thomas, now they're going to go after Sheriff Joe Arpaio. So this is insurgency is its classic. And, of course, you know, we may not right now see any of the selective terrorism or the guerrilla operations on the surface, but at least the part about the political subversion is in place, and it's well-oiled, because they're already... See, what they'll do is they'll select the impediments to their agenda, and that'll be the Russell Pierce's, and then it's go after him. Concentrate all your effort on him. Get him voted out of office. Now they've turned their sights on to Andrew Thomas. They've gotten rid of him. And now they've turned their sights on Sheriff Arpaio. So this is a well-oiled machine. And just as also as a demonstration about insurgency, the, you know, we hear about these terms. Obviously, we certainly grasped the concept when we sent the special forces over to Afghanistan back in the 1980s to battle the Soviets. So people understood what needed to be done, that you had these people that were trying to resist the Soviet invasion, but they weren't very effective. But as soon as we started supplying them with maps and intel and satellite photographs and some good communications and some shoulder-fired rockets, they were able to really turn the insurgency around. And so that clearly demonstrates to me that there are people that really grasp this concept. And as an example, and sometimes, once again, you know, what we're telling you, it may seem it never happened here type of a story, but what we're going to ask you is, you know, your mindset can be represented by, say, a glass of water. And depending on if it's just got a couple inches in the bottom or if it's brimming at the top, what we're asking you to do is pour that glass out and let us refill it. And as an example on insurgency, you know, maybe once or twice a year that you'll have your great big community events where, you know, like on the 4th of July, where you'll get the mayor out there and they'll bring in the fire department and they'll have a rock climbing wall and, you know, all the kids are out there in the marching band and the mayor gets up and makes all this big speech about how great the city is and everything like that. And all that is that's designed to make you feel good about being raked over the coals and having 50% of your wages taken away from you, extorted from you. And but that is insurgency. And I know it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that, but once you start focusing that camera a little bit tighter and get in a good, sharp, crystal clear of what is insurgency and how it's operated, then whenever the powers that be, whether it's the mayor, the city planner, or the governor that wants to come out and, you know, tell you how good it is and everything like that and then kick you to the curb and then raise the taxes and everything, then you start to see the bigger picture.
Well, one of the things that I would like to bring up, and when you're talking about this, I was listening to somebody today talking about, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution didn't start at the time frame. They spent as much as maybe 100 years planning that. So
yes. That is absolutely correct. And then so, you have to remember that the Bolshevik Revolution wasn't until 1917, but they had tried it also in 1905, and quite a few of those people got arrested. And then the initial, when they got rid of the czar, and then they actually were experimenting with what we call a democracy or something like that, where you had direct representative government. But it was the communists, the Lenins and the Stalins and the Trotskys and everything that were behind the scenes just waiting for their moment to strike.
And it was almost like there was two or three different waves of them. You know, you would have the one group that would follow one of those leaders, and you'd have another group following another leader in case the other one didn't get through, from my interpretation of it, even though...
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what will happen is, you know, the ones that want to seek power but they don't want to come out in the open, is they'll, you know, encourage this other group to overthrow, and knowing that that group is not very strong, so they'll let them do the heavy lifting and wipe out the previous government, and then they'll just come in and infiltrate or assassinate and then take over from there.
And they can appear as, you know, whatever hat they want to wear. I mean, they can appear as though they're the saviors of the, you know, the people, or they could appear as, you know, another, you know, the left hand or the right hand, you know, of the same beast. And these people, in other words, what I'm trying to say is we're dealing with a lot of the same tactics that they dealt with in that Bolshevik Revolution, and it's happening.
Oh, certainly, these are classic, timeless tactics. It's, you know, it's a certain template, and all they do is just change the template and, you know, fill in a new name here and, you know, go over here and try something else. As you know, as I recall, it was Karl Marx. He had fallen in when he was in college. He had fallen in with a group of Hegelites, as in, you know, the Hegelian dialectic, and that's directly where, you know, his Communist Manifesto and his Marxist dialectics come from. So, like you say, this stuff was brewing below the surface for 100 years before it ever was, you know, became visible in what we call the Bolshevik Revolution.
I mean, we're getting down to probably the nitty-gritty part now, but what has been boiling underneath the surface for a long time here, and, I mean, you can find different people that'll go back to certain periods, but it's been, you know, the same time that the Bolsheviks were dealing with it, the same type of things were taking place in this country as well. It's just... It's as though they saved us for last.
Huh.
Sure.
Yep.
Well, you know, if you were going after a certain big metropolitan area, and you would know that there are certain parts of the town that were unsafe to go to at night, and there were the more well-to-do areas, and there were the other middle class and the suburban areas and things like that. And if you would just go in and hit the tough parts of town, then there's the possibility that those insurgents, those gang members, might slip through your dragnet and then go into these other less violent parts of town. So what they do is... they'll go into the influential or the affluent areas, and because they're more passive, and then they'll take them over and then slowly tighten the noose around these other tougher parts of town, because at that point, then there won't be any place to run. And that's what's going on here in the United States. They've gone over here and taken over this country or that country, or whether it's Europe or Germany or France or Portugal or, you know, Libya, or, you know, pick a country. And now that they've started tightening the noose, the only one left is the United States. And, you know, generally, you know, we're fairly passive, and but there's only so far that you can push an American. And I think that also part of that has to do is because of the massive amount of the Second Amendment that a lot of the Americans have. So as you've seen over the years how they've disarmed all the people in England, and then they disarmed all the people in Australia, and they disarmed all the people in Canada, and so then they really don't have any of the means to resist anymore. I mean, sure, you can go out there and throw some rocks at people, but, you know, yeah, when you're dealing with people that got armored personnel carriers and 50 caliber sniper rifles, a rock doesn't do a whole lot of good.
So, but when they're doing this, they're not just doing it from, you know, opening up the gates and letting those come across the border. It's also carefully indoctrinating us to accept a lot of things that we may not have ever accepted in the past. And you watch it in the language, you watch it in the movies, the games, some of the classes. If you start paying attention, you start seeing this process taking place. And for those that start speaking up and saying something about it, they have to go through, often have to go through a lot of ridicule or attacks that shouldn't have ever had to happen. People should have been supporting them.
Absolutely.
Well, certainly.
I mean, go ahead, Mike.
That's why they call it, you know, political correctness, or, you know, if you say something out of turn, what do? They send you to, you know, re-education camp or whatever it is, a diversity training or something like that. all those things that are going on there, and, you know, that's what it is. And then that, you know, beats people down as to where they may see something going on, but because they don't want to go to anger management class or course, then they just won't say anything.
Right.
It's horrible because you see these true Americans who are really sick of what's going on, and they're holding signs, secure our borders. You see, yes, on SB 1070, and everybody's screaming at him, you're a racist, you're a Minuteman, you know, and it's like, wow, really? You know, you tell somebody that, hey, I go down and secure the borders. Oh, why would you do that? You're a racist. I think you're a neo-Nazi, and it's like, why would you say that? You know, oh, because there was three people who, you know, you had three bad apples out of the whole group, and they did something, and now they're paying for it, you know, with their lives. You know, it doesn't mean that it should shun the whole movement. We're trying to, you know, keep the bad guys from coming into our country, and in the people who want to make a better life for themselves, you know, process them a different way. You know, I really see this immigration thing can be solely fixed pretty easy. You know, a lot of them just want to come in here, especially during the harvest seasons, and work, make their money, and then go home. You know, and I don't see a problem with that. I, you know, give them a visa to come in for such a time once the season's done and they want to go home, let them go home. You know, tax what they've made just like everybody else and let them go home.
Well, you know, one of the things that some of these people are having to do, though, is they're having to pay to come here. And it isn't just them that I'm observing this. I don't have the exact statutes or whatever you want to call it, but there's people that are actually coming from other countries. I've run into Russians that have been coming over here that I believe what they're doing is they're leading these people into thinking that they're going to make all this money when they come here, and they're finding out it ain't as good a deal as they were, you know, told it was.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the coyotes will tell a lot of the immigrants, you know, you only have an 8 hour or like maybe an 8 hour walk, and then we've got a truck waiting for you, and then 6 days later they're walking through the desert. You know, they're promised the world, they're promised all this stuff, and these, you know, and this is where you, if you don't have any apathy for people, this is where I found my, where I was like, wow,
you mean sympathy?
I feel bad.
You mean sympathy, yeah, I think.
I'm sorry, sympathy. I'm sorry, I'm exhausted. I've had a long day. But anyway, you know, this is where you find your sympathy and be like, wow, you poor sap, man. You've been coast. You know, you paid $4,000 to get over here, and your coyotes left you in the desert to die, you know, and lied to you, saying that you're going to have this, that, and the other when you get here, and all you want to do is just make a better life for you and your family.
Okay, let me say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and this is Truth Quest with Melody, and my guests today are Rick and Mike, and they've been working down there around the Arizona border area. But what we're trying to do is to kind of get people to understand a little bit what's going on, not only there, but what we're dealing with across the country, because what happened down there is now spreading across the whole country. And so this is, if we don't talk about it, then, you know, we're not going to know how to deal with it.
Right.
So, and I hope more than that, but, you know, I'm not hearing enough of this, you know. I don't hear enough, near enough of why we need to start connecting the dots from the upper levels of our society down to the lower levels, because they all connected. One doesn't function without the other, apparently, even though they could. But, you know, the dollar has been the connective means that they've used. And until we can tear away that particular element of it, it's seemingly going to continue to go on. Agree or not?
Yes. Mike?
The love of money is the root of all evil.
Amen.
That's for sure.
Yeah, amen to that.
We'll kind of a little bit touch here on some of these other things. I see we've headed into the second hour. Some of this stuff, you know, what happens, you know, that there's people out there that are listening and whether they come from Colorado or Georgia or Florida or things like that, that, you know, they have this mindset of, you know, they hear the word desert and they got visions of Lawrence of Arabia and things, and then they'll, you know, it's like, well, you know, all you guys need to do is, you know, stand at the top of a sand dune with a pair of binoculars and you could see these people 50 miles away. And it's really not that way out in the Southwest. Depending on where your actual location is, you could be, you know, 1,000 feet above sea level or so, maybe 1,700 feet above sea level. But all throughout the Southwest, there's, you know, some pretty good-sized mountain ranges ranging up into 4,000 or 5,000 foot level. So, and then there's all the folds in the ground, the washes and everything. So you could be at the top of a small rise and with your pair of binoculars, and there could be a wash or two to your east or your west, and you could bring 100 people up through there, and you would never see them. So just, you know, if there are people out there listening that might be considering coming on down here, I'd certainly, you know, suggest that you might want to go procure yourself some topographic maps, or, you know, go on the internet. I guess Google Earth is pretty popular. I find one that's fairly good and clear and sharp images is MapQuest, that you can, you know, get a better idea. And I'm sure that you can, you know, do a little bit of study up on the topography and the rainfall and the hot and the cold climates and things like that by just, you know, doing some internet searches and start to get a better understanding and a lay of the land. And I'm sure there's YouTube videos out there that'll, you know, show you the images and things like that of
Mike,
what the, yes.
How are you guys supporting yourselves?
Out of our own pockets.
Yeah.
Okay, so because what I'm hearing you say, and tell me if I'm wrong, but okay, if you've got you know, governments and military, you know, kind of turning their head on in certain respects, then they could this stuff could be coming through in so many other ways than just what you guys are having to deal with, and yet, you know, you're left to still deal with what is happening in that area. I mean, because, you know, you don't incrementalism and doing it in many ways. It's kind of like, you know, with our elections, they don't cheat one way, they cheat every way. So this could be happening as well, what you're dealing with, and yet you guys are having to fund this. Is there any government help on this or what? How's this?
Negative. Okay. This is all out of our own pocket. Everything from fuel, water, equipment, ammunition, weapons, everything comes out of our own pocket.
Now, there are border agents, right? They're funded somewhat, or are they underfunded?
They get paid. You know, you have your Border Patrol out there who gets paid, and your BLM, and they're all paid. They're all law enforcement agencies, but as far as any groups that go out there like us, no, nobody gets paid. They are trying to do a Arizona State Guard or Arizona Special Units kind of thing. It's a state militia. They said they would pay $100, you know, five times out of the year if you volunteered for that, and that's it. So otherwise, even in that organization, you still have to pay for your equipment, you know. It's that's why we ask the public, hey, if you can help out, great. You know, anything helps, from a thank you card to a dollar to $2 to a gas card, you know, a grocery card to get water, you know, anything helps. And, you know, we send out thank you notes and we send out pictures of, you know, what we use your funds for, and just to show you that we're not out there spending it on the bars and going to the casino.
And to realize how important it is what you're doing, because if you let it go and you don't pay attention, then we're all going to be dealing with it, even though we are dealing with it. But
oh, yeah.
We got to be, you know, we got to stand somewhere in support. And this is, you know, why I feel it's so important that we talk to people like you that are trying to do something.
You know, one thing I like to tell people is I'm like, you know what, I know times are tough, we're all broke, but I ask this, if you get a coffee cup, and every quarter and every dime and every nickel that you find for 30 days, you throw it in that coffee cup, and at the end of the 30 days, you throw it in a little PayPal and you send it out, that you just helped the cause. You just helped us.
Okay, so you guys have a PayPal set up on a website?
Yes, we do.
And
yes,
what is
on,
that?
On. Our website is SonoranDesertPatrol.com, and Sonoran spelled SONORAN, and we do have a PayPal on there.
Because you guys are...
You know, the thing is, it's that what we call the 80-20 rule. You know, 80% of the people will do absolutely nothing, and it's the 20% of the people that'll do something. And, you know, we didn't come out here to have some begathon and this
right,
and that. That is absolutely not what's going on here. But it would be nice that, you know, if we could get 100% instead of 80-20, and the people out there, then it wouldn't be such a burden on that 20%. But if people could send $1 a month, which isn't an outrageous request, it would certainly be appreciated. And, you know, I'm going to touch on this, but I'm just going to be real fast, and I'm not going to dwell on it at all. There's some shakedown operations that we've identified, and I'm not going to name anybody by name. But, you know, like Rick had said, we're not going to spend this out at the bar. We're not going to spend it on cigarettes and bubblegum or anything like that. And what we are going to do is we are going to have on the website, SonoranDesertPatrol.com, that there's going to be a quarterly financial report. So it's going to spell out everything that's come in, and we're going to spell out exactly where those funds went to. Like I say, you know, there's been certain identifiable instances where people have gone on and asked for all this stuff, and now they live, you know, several hundred miles from the border, and their garage is full of all kinds of stuff, and nothing gets down to the people on the border that are the, you know, making these things go. And so without dwelling on that, I just want to let everybody listening that, you know, we're on the up and up. This is not a begathon or anything like that. This is to help you get a better, the bigger picture, a better understanding of about, you know, what's really going on and what we're up against. And, you know, when Melody asks about, you know, all the costs and how it's coming from, that quite a few of the people that are in the Sonoran Desert Patrol, out of their own pocket, we had found a place where they were offering national certification for search and rescue. And I would estimate, depending on, you know, the distance you had to travel and the study and for the your booklets and all your search and rescue gear, just as a ballpark figure, I would say that would cost anybody that would go through that course, it would cost between $300 and $400 just to take that course. So it's you know, we're definitely committed in that aspect of it, and you know, we'll touch on the search and rescue portion up here in a little bit, but it just kind of demonstrates the level of commitment of to where, you know, we definitely see what's going on, and we've stepped forward. You know, as you go through life, there's people that they'll run from the gunfire, and then there'll be people that'll run towards the gunfire. So I'll leave it at that. And do you have anything to add, Rick?
No, you hit the nail on the head for me, because I was kind of like, well, I didn't want to make it sound like this was a begathon either. You know what I mean? That's why I was kind of like, ah.
Right.
But no, you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's we are proactive. That's the thing. We're not weekend warriors. We go out, you know, we really like to disrupt the cartel because we show up on a Monday, on a Tuesday, all the way through Sunday. They don't know what we show up on. We show up on all kinds of days. So this is how dedicated that we really are, that some of us were able to have our schedules to where we can hit these guys, you know, hard and heavy from Sunday through Monday. But the thing is we do need the public's help without making it sound like, you know, we're a bunch of bums.
Well, and in,
that's for sure.
And there are those of us that I feel that we could be putting pressure on our own communities to start waking up to some of the signs of what you're saying that some of the leadership in your area have had to deal with when they start going after people that are trying to do something about this situation, and that they don't just leave it there on the border. This type of thing is very calculated and planned where they go into every community. And there are those of us that have been trying to identify the type of thing that is taking place here. I won't get into naming it necessarily here, but I name it all the time. So,
sure.
So yeah, I mean, it's an everyday word to us, and we don't even realize it. And it all plays into those who are coming across the border. That's just one means to their end.
Well, right. Absolutely. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, you know, we kind of talked about this at the very beginning of the first hour, and talking about people being coerced or threatened or terrorized to be part of this. And, you know, there's some of them that'll, you know, because the coyotes want, you know, several thousand dollars to be smuggled across the border. And then what they'll do is, well, you know, if you don't got the money, you know, if you carry this backpack, then, you know, that'll help pay the deal off. And I have from a very reliable source that one of the techniques that what they do is the females that are pregnant, and they'll be carrying a backpack with drugs in it and purposely get caught because they know that our mandatory sentencing guidelines that they at a very minimum are going to receive 1 year in jail. So then they, and this is all part of the bigger plan, so when they come up here, then within 9 months or so, then they'll have their child that has now become an American citizen, and then that's their foot in the door, then they can start, then the mother's got to stay here, then she's, you know, don't want to have the broken family, then the father gets to come here, and then the grandmother and the uncles and the cousins, and pretty soon, you know, what started off with just a backpack of marijuana has turned into a huge economic burden on the taxpayers.
Yeah, but, you know, but one of the things that we're also observing that, you know, and again, to try to get into this calculatedness of what we're seeing taking place, because, you know, while we're looking in one direction, something's happening in the other direction, but it isn't in just one direction. It's happening in many directions. But one of the major things that is happening is they're taking us down economically. But they didn't just do it to us. They went in and they did it to the Mexicans too. I mean, you know, so that they were forced to have to start participating in this in a way that manner that they may not have probably done before. I'm not saying that that's the only means, but I'm saying this is happening to us now because the powers that be know that when we don't have any money, we're willing to do anything.
Yeah. Well, did you know in 2008 Mexico passed one of the toughest immigration laws in the world? You know, and it baffles me so much that their immigration laws 10 times tougher than ours. If you get caught over Mexico with no papers and you're an immigrant, guess what they do to you? They throw you in jail until you can pay a substantial amount of money to get you out of jail. And if you can't pay that, then you just sit there. You know, it's insane. It doesn't make any sense. It's a huge oxymoron. Yet they're screaming about 1070SB. And it's like if I went to Mexico and I lose my papers and I get stopped by the federales, I'm in some big trouble. You know, and it's not like that here.
you know, and the, you know, and the immigrants are coming from El Salvador, San Salvador, you know, they're getting murdered, raped. There's no sanctuary for them to run to. They've got to boogie through Mexico and get out of there as fast as they can before they get killed so they can come into the United States.
Because they stand to have the same thing happen to them.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely. So it's funny how Mexico is just so, like, you know, their president's so anti-1070SB, but yet in 2008 they passed their own 1070SB because of all the immigrants who were coming from South America into Mexico.
So what would you think that, why do you think the ones on the northern border are doing it in such a more stealth tactic and quietly, as opposed to this one? I mean, is it like a calculated thing so that, okay, we're looking down here on the southern border, but we're not paying much attention to the northern border? Or
no, I think it's because it's not as much movement rolling through.
Okay.
It really isn't. I'm not hearing reports of, you know, they're catching 100 to 200 of them at a time. They're catching small cells of them.
Uh-huh.
But nothing substantial where they're going to report it like they do with the southern borders.
Okay.
And I think also part of it has to do with the terrain. You've got some pretty big mountains up there in along the Canadian border, and then you also have to factor in the climate. You know, half of the year there's, you know, a lot of snow up there, so it's not like it's the Southwest as to where it's pretty much, you know, open all the way, you know, 365 days out of the year. Of course, you know, there's the certain temperature extremes, but, you know, it only, in the Southwest, it only gets up to 100 degrees or more for about 100 days out of the year. So then you've got 265 days a year that it's quite pleasant. So there's a lot of factors that, of what's going on. And then I guess, you know, if you're going to have a coyote, and I'm not saying that it doesn't occur, because periodically you'll get a random report because of, you know, they've clamped down in such and such an area that now they are flying up to Canada with a, you know, a student visa or a green card or something, and then they're trying to come down in that area. But once again, because of the terrain and the climate, it's just not as conducive as just walking across the border type of a deal.
I mean, this may sound weird, but, I mean, if I was paying $1,500, $2,500 to come across, you just mentioned something. Would they be able to, I mean, with that kind of money, you would think that they could come across the way you're talking about, through the northern border instead of the southern. I mean, that would buy them a plane ticket, I would figure. But
yes. Well, you know, there was in the Arizona Republic, and it was a couple years ago, but it was done by the Pew Research Center, and it's the headline of it was something along the lines of, contrary to popular belief that these people aren't destitute, penniless, and non-educated, they all have money. And, you know, they all have, you know, somebody that comes up here and has a job, whether he's, you know, picking lettuce or he's driving a backhoe, working in a construction or something, he's sending that money back south, billions of dollars a year, and then they use part of that money to, you know, smuggle, you know, the rest of the family. And the husband comes up here, and then he brings the wife and the kids up here, and, you know, pretty soon you've got the whole gang up here.
Well, you would figure, too, that you've also got a situation where a lot of them are in those gangs, that they do make the money. So
certainly.
It isn't just like they're necessarily having to be, you know, there ought to be a ways and means that you know, circulating around, I would figure. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just looking at the different possibilities there, but I mean, if we're not looking in all directions and paying attention, I mean, we've got a serious situation going on, and if we're not supporting our local representatives who are speaking out about this sort of thing, in every other means that we can, we're going to go the way and means of many of these other countries that had the coups, even though I think we've already had a few coups, but
Yeah, I really wish they would have a coup down in Mexico so they can, you know, fix their government so we can get, you know, fix this problem. You know, that's what it stems down to. The Mexican government is actually helping a lot of the immigrants come across with a lot of these health centers that they have. I do believe it was Discovery Channel who did a documentary on it. I know you can find it on YouTube. A camera crew followed some immigrants from El Salvador and all the way up through Mexico, and they showed how they helped them go all the way through. Well, the El Salvadorians, how they had to deal with the immigration problem through Mexico to get to America. Then they were showing Mexicans who were trying to immigrate to America, and they had these cell centers with maps and cell phone numbers to help them get across without getting caught.
Uh-huh.
That's the other problem, is there's a lot of entities that are helping get these people across the border. Your SPLC, you know, which in my opinion is one of the most biggest hate groups in the United States today. You know, you have a lot of these other, Mike, help me out here real quick.
Blue Lac.
There we go. Desert Angels, you know, people like those who are actually going out and hindering these guys to, you know, to come into our country. And it's like, well, how do we stop that? Arizona finally made it illegal to abate or help out any illegal immigrant by leaving water out, but they still do it. You know, that's not going to stop them. That's just like telling a drug user, don't use drugs, you're going to go to jail. They could care less. You know, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. That's the problem. How do we stop that from happening? That's what we need help from. Stop abetting, you know, helping these people, especially the cartels, you know, with food and water.
Well, you know, and another thing that we're dealing with that seems to center around this as well is you're seeing, a propaganda campaign being set up to where they're telling these people down there that they're entitled to this, you know, coming here, that this was their country, or
absolutely, they're teaching them this in class, and they're teaching them in American schools and in Mexican schools. Of how they need to take their land back, and this is theirs, and we stole it from them, and this, that, and the other. And it's just some crazy, crazy propaganda that these guys are just popping up with out of nowhere. I mean, we just, here in Arizona, we had a protest in the middle of Phoenix. A bunch of immigrant kids decided to block the road, sit down, and say, you know, we're here, we're going to stay, we're entitled, you owe us. It's like, what? That's insane. You know, I'm sorry, man, but I don't know anybody anything.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's not only were those people that identified themselves as illegal, that because they're part of this quote-unquote Dream Act, then they were, you know, arrested by the Sheriff's Department, turned over to ICE, and the very next morning they were released because they said that they hadn't committed any significant crime.
Right. But yet they're still here illegally.
Right. Knowingly and admittedly.
Yeah.
So if we can proceed on a little bit farther, we've only kind of made it through kind of part of the thing, and, you know, we touched a little bit on insurgency before, and I gave you some specific examples, and, you know, with the Russell Pierce and the Andrew Thomas and Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And, you know, as an offshoot of that, the people that were going after those three mentioned people, Mary Rose Wilcox and Randy Peraz, to mention a few, and their whole deal is they've, you know, made public statements that, in fact, that, you know, if anybody gets in their way, then they're going to be next. So it has a chilling effect. It's kind of hard to work with, you know, your representative or your state senator when they know that if they start to say something, then there's a good possibility that they're going to be next on the radar. Because we had touched a little bit on insurgency, just bear with me a little bit, and I'll try to explain this again. When we hear this word insurgency, and there's a lot of other terminology that's tied to it. It's sometimes it becomes a little confusing. But just let me say that, you know, insurgency is a political military conflict, and it's going to be waged against a specific faction or factions, and it's going to be in its implementing an irregular military actions in support of a unified political outcome, and that is going to be short of a revolution and a civil war. Now, while regular military forces may be utilized, the irregular operations rooted in your political subversion, your selective terrorism, and your guerrilla operations play a very integral, if not a primary, role in the outcome. The political subversion, your selective terrorism, and your guerrilla operations are then the tactics that, when they're combined, may or may not represent an insurgency. And because insurgency is a strategic political development that implements these tactics as a mean to sustain itself until a further development can occur. And consequently, an insurgency as a type of war may lead to and be part of a larger conventional conflict, a revolution or a civil war. And an insurgency as a method of war implies that the attempt to use violence and irregular forms of warfare against the particular faction or factions and for the express purpose of a political military gain, which may later lead to inclusion with or the overthrow of the existing regime. Now, the object of an insurgency is to force political social upheaval in an organized fashion for the express purpose of validating a cause and therefore justifying its violent means. You know, insurgencies do not have the capacity to be a revolution or a civil war, but with staying power and continued support can ignite either. And so with that kind of a working definition and a thought process, then the pieces start to fit in. And, you know, there's, you know, we've had a lot of indoctrination about terrorism and things like that, especially since, you know, the last 10 years and things, and not to say that it hasn't been, but just as a sideline of that, that, you know, indiscriminate terrorism has never been the friend of an insurgency, but when applied properly to remove the impediments to their political agenda, then it becomes a very favorable portion of this whole bigger picture of the insurgency. And yes, maybe, you know, what are we going to call terrorism? Is it cutting somebody's head off with a chainsaw? Well, which you can see on all these M3 reports and things like that. Well, that's clearly that. But there's also certain indication that they're utilizing that here, like what Rick touched on earlier about this 15-year-old that flipped this van because he was terrorized in the threat that something might happen to his family if he doesn't drive this vehicle. Well, then that's clearly there. So, you know, if you have, you've got, again, you've got the political subversives that we could call the Mary Rose Wilcox and the Randy Perrazzas, that they're out here agitating their base, the LaRosses and the Metches and all these other things, and they are already elected to office by their base, and then you utilize the selective terrorism, whether it's north or south of the border, and then you have the guerrilla operators or your guerrilla force, and whether that would be the 18th Street Gang or the Mara Salvatruce, the MS-13, or, you know, the Los Zetas or the Sicarios. So, you know, you clearly have all of those parts already existing, and, you know, and then everybody says, okay, so now we've defined it, and what are you going to do about it? Well, the first thing that really needs to be done is the government, whether it's city, state, county, chances are it has to be started from the federal aspect of the spectrum is that the federal government and the local governments, to a certain extent, have to identify this as an insurgency. That is the very first step that they have to realize. It's not just some guy coming up here to try to better his family. This is an insurgency. And then the next step that must be taken is then you need to take the military and apportion maybe all the way up to, say, 50% of the military, and then they need to be retrained in small unit tactics as to where then they can go out and they can become the guerrillas, as Hackworth said in his book about FACE, that you have to out-G the G's. You have to become the insurgency. Oftentimes, you know, we hear these terminology, and this is something that they've dredged up from back in the 1950s and the 1960s as to where they call it this term. It's called counterinsurgency. And, you know, it's really unfortunate, or they abbreviate it, they call it COIN, but, you know, it's counterinsurgency. And just as a sideline to that is a very poor understanding about what really needs to be done, because when we start using the terminology about countering anything, that conjures up an image that you are waiting for the enemy to strike, and then you're going to counter what they do. And, you know, there's quite a bit of information on this, and don't want to dwell too hard on this, but for those of you that want to have a little bit of better understanding on what an insurgency is, and I can give you a few examples of what had happened in Malaya and in the 1950s with the British SAS and the Malayan People's Army, and then also what had happened with the Hucks and Magsaysay in the Philippines, and then what had happened in French Indochina. And there's some really interesting correlations, because these groups of insurgents had progressed from the first phase of an insurgency on into the second phase, when they were battling the Japanese in guerrilla tactics, whether because they were, you know, had occupied the Philippines, or they had occupied Malaya, or they had occupied French Indochina. And so these people had already become highly effective in guerrilla operations and their political subversives. And it's interesting on how the emergency in the Malaya was addressed by the British SAS, and then how the United States sent over Colonel Lansdale over in to work with the Philippine government to root out the Hucks, and then how the dismal failure of what had happened with the Viet Minh in our involvement in French Indochina, or sometimes it's referred to as Vietnam, that, you know, a lot of people nowadays that they'll sit here and say, well, you know, nowadays Afghanistan has become our longest war that the United States has ever been involved in, and that's really a misunderstanding or a misnomer of the true facts about what is going on, because the first person that had died, his name was A. Peter Dewey, and he died in French Indochina. He was killed by the Viet Minh, and it was by accident, but he was driving his Jeep with an American flag on it, and he was killed in 1945, and then we didn't pull out of Vietnam until 1972. So that was almost 30 years of conflict, and the people like Sir Robert Thompson and Edward Lansdale, they had both gone over here, but as Eisenhower had warned us about the military-industrial complex, that oftentimes the military is fighting the previous war, so you had a lot of these general staff officers that had been fully steeped in armor and infantry and Air Force tactics and things like that, and aircraft carriers, and that's how they felt that it was necessary to, you know, battle General Jap and the Viet Minh. And you can see how the tactics were addressed in Malaya and the tactics that were addressed in the Philippines, that where they had actually out-G'd the G's, and then where we had the military industrial complex that were fighting the Viet Minh in French Indochina. So as I hope everybody now has their paper and pencil out, and I'll run down these resources that if you want further study to help expand your mind and to have a better understanding about what insurgency really is all about. Number one is called The Art of Insurgency by Donald W. Hamilton. Number two is FM 31-20-3. It's called Foreign Internal Defense Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures for Special Forces. Number three is About Face by Colonel David Hackworth. Number four is the Summary of the Principles of the Art of War by Antoni Henri di Giomini. I'll spell his last name, J-O-M-I-N-I. Next one is Limited War by Robert E. Osgood. Next one is The War of the Flea, a Study of Guerrilla Warfare Theory and Practice by Robert Tabor. The next one is In the Midst of War, An American's Mission to Southeast Asia by Edward Lansdale. I'd highly recommend that book. And then you can do some searching around for Sir Robert Thompson. He had multiple writings and books. And these people, they weren't just some college professors puffing on a pipe and telling you, well, I think it needs to be done this way. They were actually over there, and they had demonstrated how to effectively out-gee the G's, and then when they were brought over into Vietnam, I know that Colonel Lansdale was brought into Vietnam in about 1954, 1955, but at that time we had already been involved in there for 10 years now, and they just didn't want to listen, and it was pretty much as a big escalation from that point forward until we pulled out in 1972.
Okay, now, so what you're saying here is insurgencies, warfare doesn't necessarily have to be shooting, and these things attack from many different means, and it can be, you know, like I said, in our schools, in our economies, in our businesses, so many different ways that they can come in and start infiltrating, and it seems to be we're not even aware of how it's taking place, and so what I see you saying is we're in the middle of a war right now here to save our country. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. This is asymmetrical warfare at its finest, and like you say, it's a multi-pronged attack. That they do have the people that are American citizens that have been elected to the city council, or the Raul Grijalvas that are members of Mecha and La Raza and LULAC, and then they're working hand in hand with the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL, and with their connection into to the police departments and the sheriff's departments and the FBI, and going into schools and giving the diversity training, and then down in Tucson that they have the Hispanic study courses where they're taking our tax money and making these classes mandatory, and it's basically just an indoctrination session telling all the white kids that have to take the class, and, you know, using the cultural Marxism that for somehow they're the real problem, and, you know, and then, like I say, that they also, you know, the ones that are elected to office, and then they go after the Russell Pierces and the Sheriff Arpaios. So it's clearly a multi-pronged attack, and nobody seems to really want to put their finger on it and identify it as such, that, you know, we got Janet Napolitano telling us that the border's more secure than it ever has been. And I can guarantee you that when the Border Patrol's driving up and down the highway at 75 miles an hour, they're not going to see too many people standing at the side of the road flagging them down. But if that's all they're permitted to do, and those are the only places that they're permitted to go, well, then, of course, then the arrest ratio is going to be down. and the people that are the officers in the Border Patrol or the BLM, that they know if they start doing a good job of what they're being paid to do, they're going to be out of a job. And you know, I don't have a smoking gun memo, if you will, but to the best of my knowledge, what's going on is that if you got an up-and-comer in the Border Patrol and he starts, you know, beating the bushes a little bit too heavy, and he starts getting a higher quota than his fellow agent in the same sector, then he's actually going to get reprimanded for that, because then that demonstrates that the people that are down actually on the border aren't doing a very good job, and all these millions of dollars that they spend on sensors and vehicles and helicopters and all these fusion centers and everything to monitor all this stuff isn't very effective. Because if it was effective, then why did Agent so-and-so, why was he able to get 50 people this month, and his fellow agent that operates on the same shift that he does, he only got 2? And so then, you know, you would think that somebody would be rewarded for doing what they were hired to do, but in this case, they're actually being punished, reprimanded for doing what they
do. You know, now this, you bring up something that I've felt has been, it is endemic in our society of this, what you're speaking of. We're not fighting just a belief. We're fighting systems that have been in place for not only decades and centuries, but maybe even longer than that. And when we have to worry about being able to speak out or do the right thing because of your fellow group or your fellow whatever, we've got a conflict from the beginning. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
This whole system's been going on for at least 400 years. This ain't nothing new.
Right. And so we really have to start, you know, doing some introspection here, because, and we don't have a lot of time to do so, because, you know, when you've got somebody taking off with all the money in the coffers and being able to look you in the face and say, well, they're entitled to it, even though you're the one that worked for the money and put it there, and then we allow somebody to build up other economies in other countries, but then, you know, gut ours. There's so many different aspects that we need to be asking questions on, and yet we need to be supporting people like you, because it's all needed.
Well, it's like the whole, it's like with Obama. And he wants to show amnesty to, what, 3 million immigrants? Well, that's a 3 million vote that he'll get. He's not stupid. He knows what he's doing. If he can win the Latino vote, that's 16 to 17% of the American population. That's a big chunk of people.
Well,
you know what I mean?
There's more to that that I have to, and I question, and I don't know. I may be just speaking way out of place here, but if we're not really America anymore, and you listen to it in the language, and you know, you have your America's Navy and your NATO dictating what our military can do. What is that saying?
That's telling me that we're having a North American Union. Is what that's telling me, that we're opening up our borders, that we don't want to secure our borders anymore. We want to become one nation with Mexico and Canada.
Right, and so if he's worrying about the Mexican vote, well, guess what? There's a big Mexico there.
Yes, it is. And if he could, he would have every single one of them over here to get his vote. Because, see, the other thing is, what people don't realize is, these people could actually vote a lot of our rights away, more so than what we're losing now. You know, they're coming from a socialist country. You know, Mexico doesn't have a democracy. You know, look at the government. You know, a lot of people don't really put two and two together and be like, yeah, what kind of society do they really run? What kind of government do they really have?
We're really being sold that socialism is okay. And, you know, there was a time in my past I would have even agreed with it until I found out, you know, how they put a pretty bow on something that really wasn't going to help us out. Oh, yeah, socialism sounds great, but it ain't about socialism at all. It's about control and power and... it goes to an elite few, and the rest of us are going to be sitting there holding the bag. Even the guys at the top are going to find that out.
Well, and what's really going to take this country over the top is the minute that they try to confiscate your weapons. And I think that'll be the final straw for the Americans. I think that's when America will realize that we're in some serious trouble, and we don't have much time, you know, to fight at that point. A lot of people, you'll hear the conspiracy, well, they'll come down and kick your door in. No, what will happen is they'll have a volunteer
rat you
seizure.
Out.
Well, yeah, they'll have a volunteer seizure. Then anybody who's caught with a gun is considered a terrorist at that point, which would be a domestic terrorist. And then you go do, you know, X amount of time in prison if you're caught with one of them. So, you know, that's how you're going to take over a country is if you disarm that country. And you'll look at most of the countries in the world that are happening like that are disarmed. You know, they can't fight back. It's like we're almost the only country left that you can actually arm yourself.
Right, but if you hire a bunch of you indoctrinate your kids, or you start providing jobs, because most all the jobs that they've been creating have been government jobs. What are those jobs? Well, when you're starting to you're hearing these things like you're evil if you do this, you're evil if you do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, and so we're going to pay certain groups of people to let us know if you're doing that.
Oh, yeah, and it's called InfraGuard. The FBI has recruited a bunch of, I think it was like 47,000 civilians so far since 9/11. And InfraGuard has talked about domestic terrorists more so than they've talked about the gangs and the cartels. They'll scratch the surface. They'll talk a little bit about the cartels and the gangs, but that's it. They want to talk about the sovereign citizen. That's the bad guy. The lone wolf, or any militia, like look at the Hutare. The government went after the Hutare, and they actually got a just case, and only two of them got nailed with weapons charges. The other nine of them walked away with nothing. The government had nothing on them, and they got a fair trial, which my jaw hit the floor. But it just shows that there is a little bit of hope left. And it says in our Constitution to have a working and functioning militia besides carrying a firearm, and that's where you people need to start learning who's your neighbor. Get to know your neighbor. What happens if we do have an economic collapse? We need to rely on one another, whether you want to call it a militia or just a group of concerned citizens, now's the time to start to get together and rally up. Again, I'm not going to say that I'm promoting violence whatsoever, but, you start to show that America's a force multiplier, and your government's going to start getting pretty scared and pretty worried like they are about now. A good example would be like with the Occupy movement. At first, it started out in the right direction, but now look at it. It's funded and coerced by socialism and communism. It's changed. Right, it's changed. The whole movement had changed. Now you're getting all these kids who smoke pot, play video games, and don't want to work for a living saying, yeah, the bankers owe me, they should make as much money as I do, or I should make as much money as they do. And it's like, wow, really, what about the people that really do matter in our society, like a doctor? So you're telling me that I can sit at home, play my Xbox, play with my dogs, and not have to go to work, but yet a brain surgeon has to pay me half of his money? Not so much.
That's insurgency.
Yeah,
there
but what?
Go.
And then another thing is that we have to be aware that they're going to very definitely turn us against each other, and it doesn't matter what means that they do it.
And that's a good example, because if you've been paying attention lately to the Black Panther movement and to La Raza, they're actually getting together right now. The president of La Raza, like I said earlier, got on a radio program and was promoting a unity between the African Americans and the Latinos. And that's a big part of our population. you know, and they both stated that they're common. They both have a common enemy and common goals that they must crush. Well, what's your common enemy? You know, they're really trying to ensue a race war right now, I do believe, so they can go ahead and call martial law, because they'll have an excuse.
So what do we do in the meantime of trying to support your efforts down on the border? And we have to be paying attention on all levels, obviously.
Absolutely. If you start to see anything in your neighborhood that's out of the ordinary, you know, graffiti, kids looking the same with rags, you know, you're starting to see a lot more crime in your neighborhood, step it up. Start calling your local authorities. You know, take pictures and show your authorities, hey, look, this is what's going on. You don't have to get involved directly, but you can call somebody and say, hey, I've got a problem here. Fix it. You know, before it gets to, like, some of these neighborhoods and some of these inner cities where there's posted signs saying, warning, enter at your own risk, police do not patrol this area. You know, that's telling me that they've lost. They've lost the fight. If the police ain't even going to patrol that area, they're only going to be there if they're called. And it's not one of them. It's many who go into these neighborhoods because they get shot at.
And so
a lot of people don't realize this because they don't live in the inner cities. They don't live, you know, in the ghettos. And you know, like with Arizona, we're watching, you know, the ghettos getting moved from South Phoenix because South Phoenix is trying to clean it up, and it's moving east. You know. And the gang population is getting worse and worse.
Well, you know, one of the things that's occurred to me is, so you have all these different prisons popping up around this country, and we have so many people in prison. Well, when a lot of these prisons are occupied by people of these groups that you're talking about. And so their families move into these areas where these prisons are. So you're like, you're inviting them in.
Pretty much. I mean, like little towns that we know that are on the outskirts of Phoenix at one point in time are nice to live in. Now they're cartel-run towns. The cartel runs them. You know, you can't go in there and doing what we do and try to buy provisions with a credit card because now they have your intel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people, again, like I said, they're smart. You know, and this is insurgency at its finest. These guys are in our politics. These guys are in our grocery stores, in our neighborhoods. They're in our schools. They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
And then on top of that, then you have all these places dotted around the whole United States that they call sanctuary cities.
Right.
Yeah, and like, you know, the reservation out in Arizona is one of their biggest places that they can run for refuge because they know that we can't go across that line into the Indian reservation. I won't name which one for OPSEC reasons, but one of the Indian reservations we have down here, they've run a lot to that sanctuary because they know we can't cross that line, period. They can open fire on us, and we still cannot cross that line no matter what. Or we get in trouble. See, and like I said earlier, there are no rules with these guys. These guys bend and break the rules as much as possible, but yet we have to abide by them.
Well, this
and it does get, and it gets frustrating.
Right, because and this is one of the things I brought up in our last interview was the fact that they dealt with a lot of this type of thing in Vietnam, and I'm sure in other countries as well. But some of our own men were having to deal with that very thing of sanctuary areas that they weren't allowed to go, but the enemy could.
Oh, absolutely, Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam. They weren't allowed to go into Laos and Cambodia, but that's where the Viet Cong were running to.
So who allows this? Why is it, you know, that's like, you know, tying one hand behind the back, and yet we got to be able to, you know, play the game, you know, it's insane, and so
it's real.
Yeah. It is, and that's why sometimes when I talk about this, I sitting here and I've been through this, I have to sit down because it's sometimes a mental overload. You're just like, I cannot believe, is this a bad dream? You know, am I dreaming this? But it's not. It's the reality of it.
Okay.
You know, it's a nightmare coming true.
Now, you know, I mean, we don't have to stop at the top of the hour, but if, you know, we can either, you know, bring it to a close or did we get it, or we can go, a few minutes longer if you like. But, Mike, did you get to cover what you wanted to cover?
Well, we got about half of it. We kind of wanted to touch on you know, some of the problems that we've encountered, the equipment, maybe some suggestions, touch a little bit on search and rescue, kind of also where we fit in. You know, there's the left side where the Desert Angels, that they come out here and, you know, leave water for the people, and then there's the right side that want to, you know, come out here and quote-unquote hunt Mexicans. But, you know, we're not neither one. We're certainly not bleeding heart liberals as to where we're facilitating this activity, but we're not the other opposite spectrum of it. But other than those three or four subjects, we've pretty much covered a lot of ground tonight.
Well, I, before we go, I want to bring up one thing, and it's something that we saw last week. We got a call in to go do a search and rescue, and this gentleman had been missing for the day that we called on the fourth day, and Border Patrol, Sheriff's Department had been called, BLM had been called, everybody had been called, and nobody was looking for this gentleman. By the time we found him, it was the fifth day, and we found him. And I'm like, why is it that you guys will break your necks to go out there and go find some UDAs, but we've got an American who's missing for 4 days, and you guys ain't budging? You know, right. That's a problem. That's a huge problem. And I had the commander of the BLM office call me the other day and ask me the same question. And I said, well, you're asking the wrong guy because I don't work for you. You, somewhere along your lines, you guys in many agencies dropped the ball where this guy could have died out there and his blood would have been on your hands. You know, and it's like, I just was like, I'm shocked because you'll go out there and spend all these thousands and millions of dollars to go find UDAs, but yet you have one American who's lost and you won't budge. Why?
When you say UTAs, that means?
Undocumented aliens.
Okay. Oh, UDAs. Okay. I'm
UDAs.
Sorry. Okay.
Right. Undocumented aliens.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, they'll come up across the border and then they'll run out of water and get disoriented and they'll pull out their cell phone and call, and then you'll have the sheriff's department and their helicopters and, you know, a massive manhunt to go out here and find this. But like as Rick said, you got this guy out here that he had left Friday, he was supposed to be back Sunday, and, you know, the call went out and they didn't seem to want to lift a finger at all.
Well,
you know,
I have a question. Why do their cell phones work? I mean, I can go so many places in this country and get no cell service. Why do theirs work?
Are you ready for this? It's the funniest thing in the entire world. You can go get one of those Virgin Mobile throwaway phones, and you can get roaming for free. So that way, if they're by Mexico, they're bouncing off the Mexican towers. If they're on the Indian reservation, they're bouncing off the Indian reservation cell towers. So they don't go and they don't get these, you know, Verizon or AT&T. They buy these prepaid cell phones that they have a contract with all these cell phone companies to bounce off their cell towers. That's how they're using their cell phones in the middle of the desert.
Okay.
And it gets even more sophisticated than that, where these guys are using ham radios. These guys are using everything and anything they possibly can to communicate, from turkey callers to flashlights to mirrors to radios to cell phones, you know, anything. These guys, like I said again, they're not stupid. They're very smart.
And they're well-funded on some...
Well-funded.
Yes.
Extremely funded. Where these guys are wearing a $10,000 pair of FLIR night vision. You know, infrared they're wearing. You know, they've got better equipment than we do. You know, we don't even have night vision. So it's a hard one for... We have to... It's a lot of cat and mouse that we have to play. You know... And you have to set up. It isn't like you can just go rolling around in your vehicle. Sometimes you have to sit out there 2 days and not move before you catch that load coming in. You know, so it's very when it comes to resources wise and time wise, it's straining on us, because again, these guys can get funded, you know, $100,000 to $1 million, $5 million, you know, within less than 24 hours to get what they need, and they're gone.
Okay, let me say, this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guests are Mike and Rick, and we've been talking about the border, and we're trying to kind of bring this into a close, but I also want to make sure that we've covered a few, everything that, you know, you guys feel is pertinent. And then I also want to, you know, do you guys have, do you feel like you have the manpower that, do you have anywhere near the manpower that you would like?
Negative. I wish we did. Negative. There's really not a lot of guys who go out and do this for free. You have to understand that we're getting shot at, and we're not getting paid for this.
And it's,
and there's a lot of people who are just like, you know, I said it earlier, there's people who run from gunfire, then there's people who run towards the gunfire. You know, and we're those guys that we run towards the gunfire. So, you know, this is our country, and our country's on fire right now, and we need everybody to help. And there's a lot of people, again, you know, this comes into, if you're an able body, you want to come out here, come on out. I've got my contact information out there. If you can't, but you want to help the cause, we have a donation center. And if that doesn't work, we have, you know, I've got a position from a grandma all the way up to a Navy SEAL. If you can hold a radio and drink a cup of coffee, I can use you. You know, if you can send out a thank you letter, if you can put the pressure on USPLC and all these other groups by writing letters to them too, and so do it. Write your local congressman, write your local senator who's involved in this. You know, there's a lot of things that people can do than just other than just sitting, you know, watching their TV being and clutching their pillow being like, oh my goodness, it's going to be the end of the world. What do I do?
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing when you start doing something. I mean, it doesn't take you long before you can figure out that you can be useful and help the cause. What's your website again?
It is SonoranDesertPatrol.com, and Sonoran is spelled S-O-N-O-R-A-N, Sonoran.
Okay. And, Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to add here?
Well, kind of, you know, just to some of the things, and we've kind of touched a little bit on it, some of the problems that we've encountered out here, and I'll just kind of keep them in general. Rick had touched on this deal about the cell phones and things, and, you know, you get out here in some of these areas, and your cell phone doesn't have a signal, it'll start using a lot more energy to searching for cell sites and to ping off the towers and things. And it's not uncommon, you know, if you have your regular cell phone, it may retain a charge for, you know, 2 or 3 days in town, but out here it can go flat within just a few hours. And then, so that's something that happens. The GPSs, once again, they run on batteries, and, you know, you start getting out here and using your GPS frequently, it'll, you know, after a day or two, the batteries are going to conk on it. Another issue is, you know, the popularity about the cell phones, and I've got an app for that. Oftentimes people come out here with a compass downloaded into their cell phone, and then when you get out here into these areas where there are no cell phone towers, then they'll turn their smartphone on, and then the compass dial will just sit there and spin around in a circle. Now, obviously, it's kind of something that we've touched on of what we'll refer to as blue on blue or green on green, as to where, you know, other groups or people out here that are, you know, have a common goal, but because they don't want to, you know, work together, they want to maintain their anonymity, that there's always that possibility. But that's an extreme, rare type of a case. But what our real shortage is out here is manpower. And, you know, then the last but not least of some of the problems that we've encountered out here is the Desert Angels, the humanitarian Let's Leave the Water out here. And there certainly seems to be some indication that the Desert Angels are working in cahoots with the cartels. Now, they may not know exactly on the certain time and date of when a load is coming through, but there certainly seems to be some indication that there is some type of communications between the areas, as to where then they'll come out and start leaving water dispersed out through the desert. Like they've gotten a vague call from the cartels and saying, well, you know, within the next 3 days such and such is going to happen, and then they'll spring into action and things like that. So that's definitely some of the stuff that what's going to go on. And for the people that might be thinking about coming out here for the preparation, I'd say, you know, the biggest part is going to be your mental preparation. You have to have a positive mental attitude on what's coming out here, and you need to be physically capable of, you know, taking care of yourself. This is not a babysitting service or anything like that. So, you know, your YouTube videos are only going to get you so far, and, you know, to get you a better understanding of the terrain and the situation and the whole bigger picture. But there needs to be a physical preparation, because if you've come out here and you're not capable, then instead of being the rescuer, then you're going to be the rescuee. Then the rest of the team has to stop what they're doing and then treat you medically and then evacuate you to a facility that, depending on, you know, whether it's a heat exhaustion, heat stroke, twisted ankle, snake bite, you know, pick an injury, an ailment. And so that's something. And then I'd also try to tell people something about equipment. Now Rick and I go back and forth about, you know, what's the best and things like that. And that's almost a whole nother show in itself. But, and, you know, there's a lot of popularity about the Molly gear and things. And, you know, what we're trying to say, it's kind of as a come as you are kind of a thing. We're not really saying that, you know, if you don't have this certain type of gear on this checklist, then we don't want you. We don't want to turn people away. But oftentimes people can spend quite a bit of money in, you know, getting the latest gee whiz gadgets. But, you know, you can go around to a garage sale and find a used backpack, like a book bag type of a deal, and you may not be able to go out and spend $30 on a Camelback rehydration system, but you can save 3 or 4 Gatorade bottles and put those in your backpack, and, you know, you can get a map and come out here, or you know a lot of this stuff can be printed off of the MapQuest or the Google Earth, so you can have at least a working understanding of the area that you're in and things like that. And, you know, I'm not sure how much time we've got, but we can definitely touch a little bit about search and rescue. We kind of already touched on that a little bit at the beginning of it, of the preparation. And this kind of ties into the humanitarian and where we fit in, that this is something that we take serious, and it's something that's happening in quote-unquote our backyards. And so we've decided to step up, and out of our pockets that we've, you know, gone and got these national certifications for to become better prepared mentally and physically to get the bigger picture of what's really needed to be able to conduct these types of operations and things. And there's also, you know, don't want to get too far into this, but sometimes it has to do with the firearm selection and things. And, you know, it certainly appears that a lot of the firearms, not 100%, but a large portion of the firearms that are coming up from south of the border are Kalashnikovs, AK-47s. And, you know, and I'm not going to get into the everybody knows that AK-47s work better in the desert and blah, 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 and the swamps and the jungles and everything like that. But say, for instance, if it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have a team of people that each one has got, you know, one person has got a shotgun and one person has got a sidearm and two people got AK-47s and somebody's got an SVD and somebody else has got an AR-15, because then there's really nothing that's interchangeable. If you get into a certain situation, you need to have interchangeable equipment, if you will. And, you know, when, like we say that, yeah, I can sum up, you know, people ask, well, why is it that you have those things for? And it's, you know, you sum it up in three words. It's called fast and furious. You know, we don't carry these things to get us into trouble. We carry these things to get us out of trouble. And say, for instance, you know, each one of them has their distinctive sound, whether when they're being fired or when they're being loaded and cycled, that if you were in a team that everybody would have an AR-15, and then you were out in the dark, and then you heard the distinctive sound of an AK-47 being loaded or an AK-47 being fired, then you would know instinctively that whoever is making those sounds is not with you. And so a lot of this, you know, it goes to, you know, personal preferences and things like that, but there's still a method in the bigger, you know, what's going on.
Okay, so you're saying that the military isn't supporting you, so like when they have these big confiscations of these weapons, they're not being passed your way so that you can utilize them?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, we with an automatic firearm in Arizona, you have to have your Class 3. You can't even get a tax stamp for it. It's a whole separate entity. In order to own a short barrel rifle, you have to have a $200 tax stamp in order just to have that firearm. And same with the silencer. Arizona, you can have silencers too, but you have to have a tax stamp. So any kind of military-grade weaponry that you have to have it registered through the United States government and the Arizona and the state of Arizona. So it would be great and ideal if we can get some of these weapons off, you know, and use them, utilizing to our advantage instead of them using it against us. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they would never have that. There'd just be no way.
Are all these BLMs and the Forest Service or the people, the patrol and that, like, do they come under FEMA?
I'm sorry. Did they what?
Do they work with FEMA? Are they under their jurisdiction?
Department of Homeland Security is out there, but as far as FEMA goes, no, not unless there's a natural disaster. Then that's when FEMA would take over.
Okay.
FEMA doesn't have anything to do with the Border Patrol or the Sheriff's Department.
I should have said Homeland Security. I'm sorry.
There you go. Yeah, Homeland Security does work out there, but it's a weird relationship that they have out there. They do a lot of observe and report. Unless they capture a high-ranking member from either the cartels or the Mara Salvatruce or 18th Street, then they'll send the DOJ down there, and then they'll pick them up and actually separate them from the group and take that person off somewhere else. We've seen that happen before.
You almost have to wonder who they're working for then. I mean, if that's all they're doing.
Right?
Yeah.
You think there's so? There's a lot of wondering that we do sometimes, but we just shake our heads and we keep going. You know, that's about it. That's all we can do.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And that's when we ask that help from the public, you know. Like I said, don't be afraid to give us a hand. You know, by helping us out is helping our country,
And Mike, did you have anything more you needed to...
I'd kind of like to touch on a little bit, and you know, this is not to beat up on other people, but this is another reoccurring theme that we've seen here. We'll have groups that'll want to come out here from other states, out of town people, and once again, they've, you know, seen about a gazillion hours of YouTube videos, but they come out here. They'll be unprepared. They'll come out here not even with a topographic map or a compass, and they'll come along and they'll make their five-second assessment of the way they think that things need to be done, and then they'll go off onto their own. Nobody knows where they are. They get into a jam, and then, you know, they're the ones that need to be, you know, shepherded along and things like that.
So in other words, they need some sort of a coordinated training in sync with you guys.
You know, ideally, you know, it's one of those duh things that you would think that they would see that, but I'm not sure of exactly what it is, and you know, I'm not I'll just kind of throw it out. It certainly appears to me that there seems to be jealousy or somebody's fiefdom, that somebody has their group of 10 people that they're coming from fill in the blank, and then they want to come out here and we certainly out here, we don't want to take over anyone's group in any way, shape, or form, but certainly there needs to be some coordination that, if...
So you guys are kind of... Some of these
areas are, hundreds of square miles, and it would make no sense that if somebody from, Texas would go over here in the one certain area because they're familiar with it, but nobody knows that they're there, and then you've got another group from Florida, and they go into the same area there, and then we don't know anything about it, and then we go into the same area. But if there would be coordination between these groups, then would be certainly much more effective as to where, okay, you guys go over here on road A, and when we'll go over here on road B, and these guys will go over here on road C, and, this is how we're going to communicate, and this is, the whole bigger picture, and I'm not going to go into a lot of tactics for obvious reasons on this, but for some reason, they just...
Well,
you're
also susceptible to somebody coming in and subverting your operations, right? Because of
absolutely, yeah. No, it's that seems to be one of the big, it's not that we're scared of those things, but if these cartels are more than willing to start shooting at police and things like that, then they wouldn't think twice about squishing us like a bug out here. And so, of course, there's a little bit of, concern and, coordination. And, we've certainly have tried to work with other people, but for some reason, I don't know, like you say, is it a jealousy or if it's a fiefdom that all we're trying to do is coordinate. And you would think, maybe that's where I get into trouble, but if you would think that if somebody knew 2 months from now that they were going to come out in a certain area, that they would contact the people that lived in that certain area. I could make the roundabout way that if I was planning a trip to go over here in, New Mexico or Texas, then I would call somebody that lived in that area and, ask them what the conditions on the ground were. What's the weather like right now? How strong has the wind been blowing? What time was the last rainfall? The certain specific information that you need to become much more effective in what's going on. But for some reason, there's, and I don't know what the whole...
Now, do you guys work with the guys that are doing New Mexico and Texas, or are these different groups, or what? I mean,
we try.
Okay,
we certainly try. A lot of I'm in contact with people all over the United States. We've worked with people from Texas, from Florida, from Georgia, from Colorado,
New York,
Kansas to New York to California. Everything. A lot of these other states, like for an example, like Texas, that other than, for Big Bend National Park and a few other smaller places, 99% of the land in Texas is all privately owned. The people in California that, if you've got a slingshot, they're going to arrest you. And so in a roundabout way, they like to come out in some of these other more freer places like Arizona and New Mexico, because there's not all these restrictions that are placed on what's going on. So they like to come out here, but once again, there seems to be some mindset that,
you're having to deal with the idiocies of our own government on their, instead of supporting, state-wise, let alone fed. So
I can say this, that a lot of, about 99% of the law enforcement agencies, the boots on the ground, they support us. They absolutely support what we do.
Great.
You know, and they even say it too. They're like, wow, you guys are not getting paid and yet you're still out here doing this. You know, and they're like, hey, we support our Constitution too. You know, you guys are helping us, you know, get this stuff off the streets. You know, so kudos to you. And we're like, yeah, we're just doing a job as every citizen should be doing to protect their country. You know, Ronald Reagan said it best, a nation without borders is not a nation.
Right.
You know, so if we lose our border, we're going to lose our nation. And these people, an American needs to wake up and realize if we do not have that border anymore, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. And not saying because the Mexican people are bad people, it's because it's just going to be utter chaos at that point.
Okay, and so, Mike, did you have some more you wanted to add, or did we get...
Well, you know, for one thing, you know, if there are people that are planning on coming out here, you can go to SonoranDesertPatrol.com, and there's a way to contact us. If you are thinking about coming out here, you need to be able to sustain yourself for at a minimum for 24 hours at a time. You know, we put a lot of planning in what's going on out here, and this isn't something that we just, you know, oh what are we going to do today and stand around the campfire sipping coffee until 10 o'clock in the morning and then go, hey, let's go down over here to Road C and, you know, see what we can see type of a deal. So, you know, if people are planning on coming out here, and we'll, you know, we're more than willing to help accommodate that, you know, give us a call and, you know, we can help fill in a lot of the blanks and, you know, come on out. And we're, you know, we'll do our best to help enlighten you and fill in a lot of the blanks that you may have out here. But we're just asking that there seems to be a lack of coordination on, you know, the, once again, I'm at loss for words of okay. what's going on. But, you know, this is not for the weak or faint-hearted. This is, especially now that we're headed into the summer, this is...
Well, it's dangerous down there, too, right?
Yeah. Well, you've got... You know, you've got the snakes, you've got the scorpions, you've got the centipedes, you've got the extreme heats, the swing in the temperatures. We're, you know, fixing to go into 100 degrees.
Mountain lions.
Yeah.
All kinds of good stuff. You know, javelina. We have to, you've got cactus. You know, if you don't treat your cactus wound right, you can actually get a major infection, which can lead to more, you know, what's the word? More. Let's just say it'll ruin your day. You know, the environment out here is nothing to be to taken lightly. That's for sure. You know, it's not Flagstaff where you got palm trees and it's like 74 degrees to 85 on a hot day in the summertime. You're reaching. You're peaking. If Phoenix is 110, then you're going to look out there and it's going to be about 115 and then throw on your gear on top of that. So you're looking at about 125 to about 130 degrees that you're running out there.
Wow.
So you've got to be physically prepared to do this. You cannot just be like, well, you know, I'm just going to go try this once. It could kill you. It really can. Heat stroke, you know, all kinds of stuff. And that's why when we go out there, we really pay attention to each other's health and make sure that everybody's A-okay and that we have a medic on hand who's checking everybody to make sure everybody's good to go. Because if not, you can have a squad of 10 guys, and within a matter of just a few hours, all 10 of your guys are down because of the heat.
Right.
Yep.
So you know, I think we need to kind of start bringing this to a close here. And so I do want to thank you guys for coming on the program and talking about this, because I mean there's just so many different. You have to commend you guys for your commitment and effort, especially. And,
thank you.
And keep up the good work. Any closing comments?
Well, you know, one thing is I just want to tell everybody in the closing comment that you need to shift your mindset, that we're not out here hunting illegals. We're out here training and we're preparing. And the way that we view it is the UDAs, that they're walk-on actors. They're unknown variables to test you in your skills, in your situational awareness, your medical skills, your communication skills, your security, and all those other things. So as I'd like to thank you for giving us a platform so we can help try to better inform the American citizens on what the bigger picture is, not just what, you know, the local newspaper is telling you about who's dating who and who got the touchdown this last weekend.
Right.
And Rick, did you have...
I'd like to say once again to the, to everybody who is listening, thanks for, you know, letting us chew your ear off about the truth. You know, if you can support us, absolutely. And if you can support your own neighborhoods, don't be afraid to. Take a stand. That's how you're going to get your, this is how we're going to get our country back. You've got to take a stand. And if it starts by picking up a telephone and calling your local agencies because you see some suspicious activity going on, feel free to do it. It's your right as a citizen of these United States to do something. You know, and keep up the support with us, please. You know, the morale, it helps the morale out something fierce with everybody, you know. And once again, Melanie, thanks for having us on the air. And that's all I got.
Okay, well, again, thanks, Mike and Rick, and keep up the good work.
God bless you, Melody. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Thanks, Melody.
Good night.
Good night.